on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. My name is Luke Guerrero, and it is Wednesday, December 4th, 2024. And I know it sounds crazy, but it is true. Thanksgiving is now behind us, and the holiday season is upon us in a mere 3 weeks. And pretty soon, it will already be January 2025. But just because it tis the season for families and friendships and celebrating and being thankful, doesn't mean we can lose sight of why we come here each and every day. And that's because the objective for this podcast, for this radio program, for this YouTube series, is to help you become a better and more informed investor. Now, each day we meet 5 days a week, and we bring to the table some educational items, some actionable items, and we'll go through those today. But most importantly, we answer your finance and investment questions through our anytime listener line, our iTunes reviews. Maybe you email it to us. You head over to our YouTube channel and you leave it in the comment section, or most importantly, my favorite, your live calls anytime throughout the show. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down those show topics I have for you. But first, let's tackle this caller question.
Yeah, I just had a question for the show. Mark from San Diego. I own AT&T and Verizon for a long time in a retirement account. Not a big part of my portfolio, but they're both kind of laggards the last few years. I'm just wondering for the long term, you better get out of either of them. But just hang on for the long term. Thank you if you can answer that on the show. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
All right, let's take a look at Verizon first. Both of these companies are probably well-known for their phone service, though after an AT&T acquisition of DirecTV, they've moved into more bundling. But either way, Verizon Communications is a very large company, about $185 billion market cap. And the first thing that I notice is revenue has flatlined and really fallen over the past couple years. They also don't really have that healthy of a balance sheet, though their debt levels are down from just slightly from $176 billion, some $174 billion of debt on a $184 billion market cap company. Now, with that in mind, most of their debt has been pushed off like a lot of telecom companies do because they are high debt businesses. So their interest coverage ratio is only about 4.12 times. But either way, I mean, take a look at their forward-looking price to cash flow, about 5.3. Now, that doesn't sound too crazy. It's about where their five-year average is. A couple months back, it was probably even higher than that on a relative basis. You know, over the past 3 months, they're only up 2.5%. Year-to-date, only up 12.79%. You know, honestly, I think Verizon is probably the worst of the two options. And the reason why is because technically, it's pretty atrocious. Their momentum is not great. Their margins have been sliding. The revenue has, like I said, kind of fallen off a cliff, and they don't necessarily have, or rather the revenue growth has stalled, but they don't necessarily have some of the growth dynamics that AT&T has. And so when you look at AT&T, you see that, you know, they have a negative revenue growth over the past 5 years, but over the past 3 years, they have grown a little bit. And in that time, their margins have kind of corrected themselves. Back in 2022, negative 6.9%, then 11% net margin, projected to be about 6.7% this year. Now, they're a little bit more expensive, trading at a forward-looking earnings of about 10 times. They do have a little bit less debt on their balance sheet as well, I believe. Let me pull that up here. But I think the key here between these two companies is the way that they're attacking the market. AT&T, I think, has better growth prospects. Yeah, they have $146 billion in debt on a $170 billion market cap company. But still, I think that AT&T's strategy focusing on kind of bundling their premium services after their DirecTV acquisition and being more all-encompassing than just what Verizon is offering, I think AT&T's expansion of their fiber optic network to try and compete and how they've been able to siphon some business off of Verizon is certainly something that would lead me towards AT&T rather than Verizon. But either way, I just think these are two companies that have a lot of debt. don't necessarily show outsized growth. And so I think there are better opportunities out there in the market. If I had to choose between the two, I would keep AT&T. But either way, I think it's okay to move on. Thanks for the call. Now, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned for you. My main focus point concerns this headline. U.S. manufacturing continues to struggle with tariff uncertainty. Trade tensions have created an unpredictable environment, impacting production decisions and investment strategies. Also, we'll touch on the potential for trade war, and we know some of what may be imposed from the U.S. on China, but how may China strike back, and what does that mean for us as investors and the companies in which we invest? We'll also touch on Buy Now, Pay Later, which I imagine had a marvelous weekend and Monday after Black Friday and Cyber Monday, and how there are some reasons to celebrate if you invest in those companies, but there are still some things to be concerned about. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on Saudi Arabia. And this is something we've been talking about for quite some time, how Saudi Arabia, and more specifically OPEC, has lost really its stranglehold on global oil markets. So what does that mean for 2025? We also have some voice bank questions ready to play, including one on 403B plans and one on bonds, and some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestDoc YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. Now we're going into a short break, and on the other side, we'll briefly touch on today's market activity, play more of your questions here on InvestTalk. My phone lines are open and waiting for your questions now.
Okay, got to get serious with my finances. I've been working a long time, and I know there's still got to be more that I can do to build my wealth quicker. I don't want to have to work forever.
If you are not maximizing your employer-sponsored retirement plan, KPP Financial can help. With our professional oversight, you can potentially enhance your investment performance by an average of 3% annually. At KPP Financial, we provide a comprehensive 401k management program designed to optimize your retirement savings. Our approach includes creating custom investment allocations tailored to your goals and risk tolerance. That can make a big difference in your favor.
Maybe it's time to tune up my retirement plan.
For more information on how you can take control of your retirement savings, visit our website, kppfinancial.com.
KPP Financial. Sounds good.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Before we move further, let's talk about the market today. U.S. stocks were higher, ending near best levels. The Dow up 69 basis points. The S&P 500 up 61 basis points. NASDAQ up 1.3%. The Russell 2000 small caps up 42 basis points. S&P 500 posting its 11th gain in the past 12 sessions, while the S&P, Dow, and NASDAQ all set fresh record highs. Today's indices continue to see notable support from big tech. Other outperformers, looks like semis and software doing particularly well. Airlines, cruise lines as well, having a good day. Underperformers included pet products, protein companies, food, HPCs, chemical, steel, trucking, and home builders. Gold finished up 0.3% today. Crude oil settled down 2% after a notable gain yesterday. But overall, not much specifics behind today's upside. The market really in waiting mode ahead of some macroeconomic data to end off the year, but really policy changes next year. Still a rate tailwind, big tech leadership really helped drive today's gains. And the latter is really in focus recently following the rotational drag in November, which saw tech underperforming. A lot of geopolitical complications overseas, but it didn't seem like there was really any meaningful spillover into the markets. Lots of headlines today about the latest Trump staffing picks, including Navarro, Atkins, Slater. Though it really fits with the widely known policy leanings from the campaign and seems to be more noise than news from a market perspective. Nothing really incremental on the monetary policy front from Fed Chair Powell this afternoon, though hinting that the economy was looking strong. November ADP private payrolls came in just below consensus, with October revised down by nearly 50,000 jobs. Release noted overall job growth still remaining healthy, though industries mixed, with manufacturing shedding jobs. Lastly, the latest Fed beige book said economic activity rose slightly in most districts. St. Louis Fed's president said a pause is possible at the upcoming meeting. I think the biggest concern is really the warning that was given about cutting too much too quickly, and how that is probably the more aggressive downside risk relative to cutting too soon. Now, as we've mentioned from time to time, our podcast is available in video form over on the InvestTalk YouTube channel. Just head over there and search InvestTalk with two T's. And while you're watching our video and you're looking at our charts and looking at our faces, if you have a question that pops up into your head, you know what? Just leave it right there in the comment section, and we will get to those as soon as we possibly can. This one coming in from user GSG2, and it's a question about small caps. It says, since the election, small caps have been doing great. I still think inflation may go higher, and these indebted small caps may go lower next year. But in the short term, what is your view on small caps? Maybe even if it's just as momentum. Well, I think momentum's there. I think the reason why small caps tend to do may do better in the next year. Sure, they could be hit by higher borrowing costs. A lot of the policy of the next Trump administration may be inflationary, right? It may increase input costs. It may lead to consumers having to spend more. It may lead to more restrictive monetary policy. The thing that small caps really benefit from is deregulation and corporate tax breaks, right? And so with that on the horizon, with that being the key indicator of what may come in the second Trump administration, I've been saying for a while, right, if you want any indication of what's likely to be the focus of economic policy in Trump 2.0, look to Trump 1.0. A lot of that was focused on deregulation and cut of corporate tax rates. So small caps tend to benefit from that type of thing. And so because of that, you've seen this drive of small caps higher, and they have been lagging over the past year or so. And so with that in mind, the question is, okay, how sustainable is that going forward? I think certainly in the near term, you do have some momentum that's going to elevate equity valuations broadly heading into the end of the year. You have positive seasonality that's really in your benefit. You have a market that is broadly higher and thus isn't going to be pushed downward by continued tax loss selling, because a lot of funds are not really at losses broadly. And so I think a lot of that is going to float not just the equity markets, but small caps heading into the short and medium term. So you may see this continued rotation into names that have historically, or rather over the past year or so, not done poorly, but underperformed some of those larger tech names. Thanks for watching, and thank you for leaving your comment in the InvestTalk YouTube comment section. Let's go ahead and play another listener caller question now.
This is Steve from Mission Viejo, California. I wanted to get your thoughts on Disney. It's been in the news quite a bit, and just wanted to get your thoughts on now being a good time to jump in. Thanks. Appreciate all that you do.
Let's take a look at Disney. I don't think I have to explain to anybody what Disney is, the Walt Disney Company, ticker DIS. And going back to the pandemic, they didn't do particularly well for a couple reasons, right? One of them is, well, they had to close down their theme parks, and that's a big source of the revenue, not just in terms of people showing up, but then people, right? It's their primary marketing wing here. You show up, your kids say, I want that, I want this. And so a lot of revenue is driven by that. They also had a pretty big drop off because they were losing a lot of money on their streaming service. Now this year, they actually moved that into positive territory. That's been a boon to the stock a little bit towards the back half of 2024. But I think one thing that you got to note that's really been beneficial is the increase in cash flow. Operating cash flow has grown pretty substantially in the past 2 years. Profit margins have started to move in the right direction as well. They lost money in 23, and it's moving slowly, but still 5.5% this year is pretty solid. Free cash flow doubled year over year, something that we certainly like to see. And so because of all of this, Disney has been in the news, right? They're up 31% over the past 3 months, only up 29% year to date. So all of my math folks out there can tell you that most of the price appreciation over the past 52 weeks has been in the past 3 months. Now, right now it's trading at about 21 times forward-looking earnings. That's well below its 29.3 average. It's trading about 2.1 its book value. Right? 2.4 is its 5-year average. But I think there are potential headwinds on the horizon, right? One of them could be the increase in importation costs of goods from China, right? How much exposure do they have in manufacturing in China and all those things that they sell to you at Disneyland? That's certainly something. Another is that it's kind of just becoming very expensive to go to some of their theme parks to buy some of their merchandise. A lot of their IP that they purchase, Marvel, those movies are not doing as well for the Disney studios as they were when they originally purchased them. And so I think that although I do like Disney as a company, this may be a very good price to enter into. I think until we get some policy direction next year and how that may affect really the how it moves from the top line to the bottom line of their income statement, what the input costs are going to look like for there, you do have some headwinds that could kind of curtail the rise that we've seen over the past 3 months. So for now, you know, it's had a big boost over the past 3 months, ripe for a pullback. I would keep it on my watch list for now. That's Disney, ticker DIS. We're moving to a break, and still to come, my main focus point, more answers to your questions. And you know what? We got one in email today, so we're going to answer that too. But if you're interested, give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. InvestTalk. Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Luke Guerrero is here now. 888-99-CHART.
Looks like we have a live call. Corey from Indiana. You have a question about CELH. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
I'm looking to buy it. I know it hit a 52-week low recently and had something to do with some distribution issues potentially with Pepsi, and I was just wondering what your thoughts were on it.
Of course. Well, Celsius Holdings, ticker CELH, what they do is they produce a range of fitness and energy beverages under the brand name Celsius. They really got started, I think. They became very well-known on social media, you know, fitness influencers. I've had the drinks. I don't particularly like them, but that's besides the point. So take a look at Celsius. You know, it had quite the run-up from about 2020 into, 2024, right? They went from about $1 all the way up to about $62, $70, $80 earlier in the year. But now year to date, they're down 46%, down 44.67% on the 52 week as well. Now, the reason why is because there's some potential for some sales declines because of, I would say a couple of things, right? There is Pepsi's distribution issue. Another is that, well, there's a lot of competition out there. And so what you saw over the past 5 years is 90% annualized growth year over year. But look at that, right? From 2023 projected to this year, about $1.3 billion in sales, going to be about $1.3 billion in sales this year. So the revenue has really fallen off. And also their margins are slipping from 17.2% is what it was last year, their net margin projected to be about 12.6% this year. And with all of this in mind, they're still incredibly expensive, trading at a forward-looking earnings of 32, price to book of 16. Now that is below their five-year average, but when you see this explosive growth from $1 to set, you know, almost $80, over $80 in 4 years, well, that tends to be what you're seeing. And so even though you see all this outperformance on an industry level, all this outperformance on a broader index level, you're seeing some underperformance now. And so the question is now a good time to buy this name? Well, frankly, I think it's still way too expensive. I don't see anything from a momentum perspective that shows this decline really subsiding at all. I know we got a lot of calls on this a little earlier in the year, and I said one of the biggest threats to Celsius is new entrants, right? There's not a lot of, it's not difficult, rather, to create their product, to create other energy drinks, to steal market share. There's not a lot of loyalty, brand loyalty within the energy drink business. And so, you know, if you want to invest in this name, I think that's fine, though I don't necessarily agree with the investment if you're doing it now, right? Their short interest is 16%. That means a lot of the market thinks it's still going lower. They're issuing a lot of shares. And really, from a momentum technical perspective, it all looks pretty bad. So, you know, if you want to keep this name on your watch list, I think that's fine. I think it probably has a lot of more room to run down because, frankly, it's still, even with this down 44% in the past 52 weeks, still too expensive right now. Thanks for the call. Now, my main focus point today concerns this headline. U.S. manufacturing continues to struggle with tariff uncertainty. The U.S. manufacturing sector showed slight improvement in November, with the ISM Manufacturing Index rising to 48.4 from October's 46.5. Now, while this exceeded expectations, it remains below the key 50-point threshold that is what signals an expansion, right? Above 50, expansion; below 50, contraction. In fact, the index has only crossed into expansion territory once in the past 26 months, highlighting the ongoing challenges for the sector broadly. Now, one bright spot was new orders, which climbed about 50 for the first climbed above 50 rather for the first time since March, potentially reflecting post-election clarity that really allowed companies to push through these delayed purchases. However, production remained weak at 46.8, and employment was still in contraction at 48.1. Now, it's not all bad. Inflation pressures, it seemed, are easing, with prices paid index dropping to 50.3, which helped by softer energy costs. Despite these modest gains, the outlook for U.S. manufacturing remains pretty clouded by uncertainty, particularly around the implementation of one of President-elect Trump's promises, tariffs. Now, Trump has tied tariffs to these broader economic goals, and really beyond just economic goals, immigration control, military spending commitments from trade partners, all these things where tariffs are used as part of the tool set of bargaining. And this creates significant unpredictability for manufacturers because they could be facing some potential supply chain disruptions, higher input costs, and really a risk of retaliatory tariffs on U.S. exports. Now, while tariffs could theoretically boost domestic manufacturing because if you make foreign goods more expensive, you may want to reshore your supply chains here, they also kind of complicate planning and increase costs for companies reliant on global supply chains. Until there's more clarity on the scale and timing of these policies, probably manufacturing activity will remain subdued. Now, the sector has been a bellwether for broader economic health, but its struggles over the past 2 years reflect the headwinds posed by trade uncertainty and global economic pressures. For now, the U.S. manufacturing industry is waiting for clearer policy signals to guide its next step forward. Certainly, we will be getting those in a few months. On the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this question. Should you retire abroad? Data from the Social Security Administration shows that the number of American retirees choosing to live abroad has surged. That's tomorrow. But for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Looking to connect with your local audience? AdManager.fm makes it easy to reach consumers through podcasts, radio, and music streaming. Need an audio ad? Our AI professional studio helps you create one in minutes. From crafting the perfect message to launching your campaign, it takes just 4 to 5 minutes. No hassle, no waiting, just instant access to the ears of your local customers. Visit AdManager.fm. Your voice, your audience, your success.
The numbers are in. InvestTalk, now with more than 60 million downloads. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your finance and investment questions 24/7. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
I have a question about bonds. If I were holding some longer-term bonds, whether they be treasuries or corporate bonds, and when interest rates start going back down, assuming that the bond value increases, how do you decide when to sell the bond? Like, how much would it need to increase versus holding on to the bond to maturity and just collecting the coupon? Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out when interest rates start falling, if it's better to sell the bond and use that towards something else or hold, keep a hold on to it. Look forward to hearing your advice on the show. Thank you.
Well, I think the answer to that question depends. So the question was essentially, you're holding a bond. As interest rates fall, generally speaking, the price of the existing bond is going to move up. And the reason why it moves up is because, well, now newly issued bonds are generally going to have lower interest rates than on the run bonds from last week. Those newly issued bonds from last week, as example. But I think the core of it is, why are you invested in these bonds, right? If you invested in this bond as some sort of liability matching strategy, then you wouldn't want to really sell these bonds, right? You'd want to hold it for the coupon and hold it for maturity. If you're looking for broader capital growth, then probably you're going to want to start divesting from some of these bonds and moving it into equities, because historically, over time, equities outperform bonds. So I think the core of the question is, good job, you understand generally what the dynamic is between interest rates and current bond prices, but really it is a personal circumstance explanation for why you bought those bonds in the first place and how else you might use that capital to either invest in maybe some undervalued bonds that have more beneficial characteristics, or equities broadly for that capital growth. Thanks for the call. Let's head back over to the InvestTalk YouTube comment section and answer another one of our questions. This one from Podbean listener, and it's on ticker RIVN. And it says, I would like your opinion on Rivian stock, please. And I actually hold a small percentage, which is down massively, around 80%. I apologize. It's actually a question we got via email, not from YouTube. But either way, no matter how we get those questions, we answer them. And so this question is about Rivian Automotive. That is ticker RIVN. For those of you who do not know, Rivian is an electric vehicle manufacturing company. I think their cars look pretty cool. But it's not enough to look cool. You also have to, bring in cash flow, make money, try and turn a profit eventually. And Rivian has really done none of those things. Their cash flow has been becoming increasingly negative, though in the past year it has turned towards positive growth, though still $4 billion in the red in terms of operating cash flow. Their free cash flow, though, again, making some headway towards the positive, is still deeply, deeply negative. Their margins, though improving, are also still deeply, deeply negative. And all the while, they've been issuing a bunch of shares, up from about 900 million in 2022 to about 1 billion shares today. Now, their short interest out there is about 20%. And their debt levels, even though they're issuing a bunch of shares, still pretty high. For a $12 billion company, they got $5.8 billion in debt. And so I think there's also probably something else that could be a macro headwind here, which is the likelihood that the Trump administration next year removes that subsidy for electric vehicle purchases, though we don't know. You know, states may pick up the slack there to encourage EV adoption. But still, honestly, I'm not seeing a lot that I like. A lot of debt, not making money, not even close to positive on both a cash flow level and a margin level. And poor headwinds. And you know what? The market agrees with that 20% short interest. So for Rivian, I'm going to have to pass. Thanks for the email. Now let's shift gears a little bit and talk about one of President-elect Trump's more consequential picks. And that is his pick for Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick, who also was the chair of his transition team, and how it's causing ripples in Beijing. Now, as Trump promises steep tariffs on Chinese imports, including an additional 10% on day one of his presidency, Chinese officials and investors are scrambling to anticipate what could come on day two. Some wonder if Trump's ultimate goal is a 60% tariff on all Chinese goods, a move that could devastate China's economy broadly. Now, while Lutnick remains relatively unknown in China, other Trump appointees have pretty well-documented hawkish stances towards Beijing. Marco Rubio, set to become Secretary of State, has pushed for Chinese companies to delist from U.S. exchanges. Mike Waltz, tapped for National Security Advisor, has openly criticized China. And Jameson Greer, the incoming trade representative, helped shape the first U.S.-China trade war. Now, amid this tough lineup, China's strategy is starting to take shape a little bit. President Xi recently outlined red lines, stating that Taiwan and Communist Party rule are completely off limits in trade negotiations. Meanwhile, Beijing has moved to reduce tax rebates on exports like aluminum and batteries, signaling a possible preemptive step to deflect accusations of unfair trade practices. Additionally, China also plans to boost its global trade ties. Measures including expanding export credit, improving logistics, and waiving tariffs on imports from some poorer countries are how they're trying to gain favor. Yet the stakes for China are a lot higher than they were last time around. While Trump's tariffs aim to shrink China's trade surplus with the U.S., currently at $340 billion, the broader trade imbalance with the world has only grown, reaching $820 billion. Oxford Economics estimates a 60% tariff could slash China's export growth by 6.5% next year, a severe blow to an economy that is already struggling. Now, China has options for retaliation, but again, faces more challenges than they did 4 years ago. While it could allow the yuan to weaken, such a move risks a lot of capital flight. Instead, Beijing may tighten export restrictions on key materials like gallium and germanium, essential for tech industries, or use its anti-foreign sanctions law to target U.S. companies that operate in China. And the tensions may extend beyond trade. The ongoing U.S.-China tech war is set to intensify, with Trump likely to build on Biden's restrictions on advanced AI chips and semiconductor investments. Now, as China braces for a more aggressive U.S. stance, Xi Jinping is signaling openness to trade talks, but warns that crossing his red lines could escalate conflicts. With both sides poised for confrontation, the coming months will likely define the future of U.S.-China relations and global trade broadly. We got time, so let's go ahead and play another listener question now.
Hey guys, this is Brett from New Jersey. I had a question about my 403b plan. I have a 403b plan through New Jersey Teachers Association. I also took out a loan against that. The loan 6%, but 4% of that 6% goes back to myself. I wanted to buy a boat this summer. My family loves it, and I like fishing. I know it's not the greatest investment, probably the worst, but I did it anyway. My fees with Equitable are a little higher than I'd like. Would I still be able to transfer that 403B to somebody else, even though I took out a loan on it? I don't really know how that works. If you have any information, I'd appreciate it. I'll be listening on the podcast. Thank you.
So first and foremost, I'm glad you recognize that a boat is not a good investment. But you know what? Life is about utility sometimes. And if you get joy out of fishing, if you get joy out of going on that boat, then you know what? Go for it. And so to answer your question about 403b plans, really any retirement plans, yes, generally you can transfer them to a different provider, even with a loan. But the complexity there is depends on how that loan is handled, right? It may stay with your old provider, or it may move along with you, or it may need to be repaid immediately. It depends on the terms of the contract with that provider. So that's something you're going to need to dig into. Another thing you're going to have to consider is if the provider you're switching to accepts transfers and accepts transfers with a loan on the account. And lastly, I think it's really important here is that you want to ensure that the transfer is direct because you don't want to incur any taxes or penalties. So to answer your question broadly, yes, you can generally still transfer, but it depends on the specific agreements you have with your existing and agreements you have with your new provider. So you're going to need to dig into those things. Well, 2024 is moving fast, and the proof is this. Thanksgiving is done, and the year end is not too far off. So the question is, are you ready for the new year? You may have noticed that we've been telling you that a new market environment has taken hold, and there are many reasons for this. So serious investors need to be able to adjust their thinking and strategies to fit the changing complex times. Let me remind you that here on InvestTalk and at KPP Financial, we operate with a philosophy of independent thinking and shared success. We offer unbiased guidance, practice parallel investing, where we invest alongside our clients in investment strategies that we implement for ourselves. I encourage you to take advantage of our offer to provide a free portfolio review assessment via telephone or Zoom meeting. Send us a message through investtalk.com. This is InvestTalk, now with more than 60 million downloads. Our work continues in 30 seconds, so hang on.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future.
Would this be an opportune time to get into annuities?
Everyone's situation is different.
Get your thoughts on CRM, Salesforce.
And so are their questions.
And I was just calling for your assessment of Blackstone Incorporated.
24/7, rain or shine, InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. 888-99-CHART.
What's up, Justin and Luke? This is Nick, a longtime listener from Long Island. Just wanted to get your opinion, you know, two pretty different sectors, but wanted to get your opinion on RTX and LOGI, Logitech. Looking to take a position, either one of them, maybe it would be like 1.5 to 2% of my portfolio. I'm very tech light. I do own some industrials. Just wanted to get your opinion. Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
Okie doke. Let's pull up the first one, which is RTX Corporation. So RTX Corporation, Raytheon Technologies. It's a multinational aerospace defense product services company. That's a fairly large company, right? About $159 billion market cap. And over the past year, 52 weeks, it's up 43.43%. Now, its revenue growth is pretty stale, or pretty stagnant, rather, only about 70 basis points on an annualized basis year over year. And its cash flow only started to improve really in the past year and a half or so, right? You see, free cash flow grew from about $1.6 billion in 2020 to about $5.4 billion last year, though projected to fall to $4.7 billion next year. Now, they have a lot of debt, though. For the size of the company, it's not too crazy, about $43 billion in debt on a $157 billion market cap company. Now, on a relative valuation basis, it's kind of where it's been over the past 5 years, trading about 19.4 times forward-looking earnings. It's been about 17.9, and its five-year average, about 2.6 book value, slightly ahead of the 1.7 it's been over the past 5 years. But over the past 3 months, it's really down 1.5%, though it is up 1% today. Now, I do like the theme of aerospace defense names, and the reason why is the likelihood of a pullback in international ties means that, well, Europe is going to have to rearm. But you haven't really seen that bear out in some of these names. And so for Raytheon, a company that has really solid cash flow growth, honestly, pretty solid revenue growth, though it doesn't look like much, right? Over the past 3 years, it's very solid, from $67 billion to about $79 billion in a three-year basis. And it doesn't have too much debt, and they buy back shares. They have a solid dividend, about 2.1%, though that is below where it's been the past 5 years. But that's because you've seen some expansion in its price over the past year, right? 43% over the past year. But its dividend's also grown from about 201 coming out of the pandemic, projected to be 247, though notably lower than the 284 it was in 2018. I think overall, with RTX, what you have is a name that fits a solid theme, like I said, for rearmament, reinvestment within the European defense, within U.S. defense. And so I do like that name, and it seems to be at a relatively affordable price. Now, Logitech International, what they are is a software company. I'm using a Logitech mouse. I think I'm using a Logitech keyboard as well. And they are a different story. They have more solid growth, more robust growth, about 9% on an annualized basis. And they're trading underneath their five-year average, about 7.8 times on a forward-looking, 17.8 forward-looking earnings, relative to about 20.8 over the past 5 years. But see, for Logi, one issue that I have is free cash flow is really nothing impressive. It's fallen in half, projected to fall in half over the past year. Its margins are really nowhere near where they were in 2020 and 2021. And I think from a more general perspective, we're moving into a hardware cycle where software is going to improve broadly before hardware improves. And so even with this in mind, I think that of these two names, I would be more likely to go towards RTX, because thematically, I think over the next year, 2 years, 3 years, it fits better with some of the tailwinds that are going to be at the back of the aerospace and defense industry. So if I had to choose between Logi and RTX, I would probably go RTX. Now moving into break, and when I return, we've got one more live call from Sherry in Pennsylvania. I hope she's an Eagles fan. This one is out, BLDR. Sherry, hang on. You will be next on InvestTalk.
Everybody wants a secure financial future, but getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information. That means you'll have finance and investment questions. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Sherry from Pennsylvania, thank you so much for waiting. You have a question on BLDR. Do you own it, or are you looking to buy it?
Looking to buy it. I'm looking for a housing play as interest rates going down. This stock has gone up a lot last 2 years, so it's there a good entry point
Yeah, so let's take a look at Builders FirstSource, the ticker BLDR. And it's the nation's largest supplier of building products, structural building products, that is. And they started to move into these value-add component area over the past couple years. Now, the revenue growth over the past 5 years is pretty solid, but most of that has really been centered around the pandemic, right? From $7 billion to $19 billion in 2021, $22 billion in 2022, and that's fallen off to $16.4 billion this year. And just like their revenue, their margins have fallen off as well from 12.1%, the high in 2022, to about 6.8% this year. Now, interestingly enough, I got a question about this from one of our clients today, and I'm going to say the same thing that I told him, and that was that I agree that there are some tailwinds in terms of the necessity to build houses, apartments in the US, right? That is one of the most, that is one of the highest growth areas of cost for American families. And so there's a likelihood that in the next decade, we're going to be building a lot of homes. We just have to. But the problem with being a value-add supplier of construction products is you can become particularly susceptible to the areas where your supply chains are. And so this is another name where, yeah, it's on a little bit of a downturn over the past 3 months on a relative basis, right? It's only up 4% the past 3 months, only up 6% year to date. It's lagging the industry by 16% this year. But I think there is still some potential secular headwinds related to tariffs. And until we get some clarity about what the exclusions are, who's going to have these taxes on importations, there's a lot of outsized risk towards names that are dependent upon the supply chains that could be affected. And so given that we're going to get some clarity in the coming months, I think it's perfectly fine to wait. And for now, I would wait on this name, Builders FirstSource, ticker BLDR. Thanks for the call. Now, before we head off into the day, as Christmas cheer came early for some investors in buy now, pay later, or BNPL companies, Cyber Monday and Black Friday really brought spending through a lot of these services and caused them to hit a record $991 million, according to Adobe Analytics. For the entire holiday season, BNPL spending is projected to reach $18.5 billion, up from $16.6 billion last year. This growing adoption has fueled investor enthusiasm. The firm's stock has surged nearly 60% over the past month, with shares trading above their 2021 IPO price for the first time in years. Block, the parent company of Afterpay, has seen its shares jump almost 30%. Meanwhile, Klarna has filed for a US IPO, signaling growing confidence in the sector. Part of this optimism comes from a firm's recent securitization of its loans, which saw favorable pricing compared to its past deals. Another factor is the belief that regulatory scrutiny from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau might ease under a Trump administration. Elon Musk's recent comments suggesting that the Bureau should be eliminated entirely have added to this sentiment. But investors may want to temper their expectations. While buy now, pay later spending is growing, it's not really outpacing the overall retail growth by much. Adobe forecasts BNPL shares of online holiday spending to reach 7.7% this year, an increase but only slightly from 7.5% in 2023 and 6.8% in 2022. The bigger challenge lies really in that pay later part of the equation. In the past, market jitters have been sparked by concerns over consumers failing to repay buy now, pay later loans. Companies like Affirm have mitigated these fears by really focusing on short-term loans, but also targeting people who are more creditworthy. However, if providers face higher default rates or need to tighten credit standards, it could disrupt the sector's momentum. The holiday season has really been a boon for BNPL providers, but as with any celebratory spree, there's risk of a hangover. For now, investors are enjoying the ride, but keeping an eye on repayment trends will be key to sustaining this growth. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another episode of Invest Talk. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify, and please be sure to leave us a rate and review on iTunes. Remember, we can help you better understand your portfolio dynamics and calculate your investor risk number. Just go to investtalk.com and click the portfolio review button. This is a free and confidential service. If you haven't optimized the potential of your 401k, guess what? We can help you there too. It all starts at investtalk.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.